Hello, and welcome to CMO Combos, the CMO Alliance podcast, the show where we get the opportunity for conversations with CMOs and top-level marketers around the world on what it takes to be a modern CMO. Today, I'm speaking to Alan Gleason, fractional CMO for B2B SaaS startup companies and founder of Work With Agility, on the big differences between being a startup CMO in Europe and the States, and what skills CMOs need to survive and thrive in that environment.
Hi, Alan. Welcome back to CMO Combo. How are you doing today?
Very well, Will. Listen, great to get a chance to talk to you again. So thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to speak to you last time. It was great to speak to you again. Like really, really interesting stuff in the last episode, talking about the B2B startup SaaS landscape in Europe, which is something you're an expert on. And again, we're talking about something that's very much your expertise. We're talking about being a fractional CMO. It's something we touched on briefly in the last episode. So maybe you could introduce yourself just a bit briefly, since people have met you before on the show, and talk a bit about what it means to be a fractional CMO in the modern day.
Sure. So, well, yes, I'm a B2B SaaS consultant based in London and supporting companies that I guess that are usually VC-backed, Will, looking to accelerate growth, and they're looking for some sort of strategic support. Fractional CMOs are, they're not new concepts, but they are, I guess, growing in popularity, whereby you're not a full-time CMO and CMO is chief marketing officer. So often the difficulty with a full-time chief marketing officer for many of these companies is they're probably pre-Series B, right? So they're kind of in that window which lots of SaaS startups are sitting. Firstly, it's difficult to hire full-time CMOs that have got B2B and SaaS experience. There's not a whole lot of them out there. And secondly, they'll often command fairly significant salaries in the market. So there's a difficulty filling out that C-suite if you're kind of pre-Series B, unless, of course, you've had significant traction and you're already well on your scale-up journey, then you can potentially fund it from cash flow. But many kind of fall into the bucket of, they're not quite able to, but they need the sort of leadership in the function. And that's where I come in. So I work with clients that I can help probably a day a week, but obviously I'd work every day, but the time would add up to probably equivalent of a day a week, where I'm giving direction, helping with the sort of strategic issues, everything from composition of the team, KPIs you should be targeting on, activities you'd be focused on for lead gen. So there's some of the things that you get to do. And yeah, I find it a very rewarding sort of way to work with clients.
Definitely, it sounds it. Because, I mean, maybe it's just me, but as a marketer, I love variety. I love having a variety of different projects to work on. That sounds like something being a fractional CMO would allow you to do, having all these different challenges going on at the same time, different projects you need to work on in different ways. Is that something that attracted you to the role initially?
Yeah, I mean, it did, right? So, of course, there are challenges trying to juggle lots of balls. So you have to be kind of very well organized, right? So, you've got to be managing your time carefully. You've got to be very focused on the client requirements. But the variety does appeal to me. But I guess the other thing that appeals to me is you end up then with a much deeper knowledge pool to draw on. So you're sort of essentially getting lessons across different companies at different stages of their journey. And you again end up with this, I mean, it's an overstated phrase, flywheel effect, whereby you can short circuit lessons a lot quicker for clients, which means you're spotting patterns a lot quicker, which can bring a lot of value to the right clients. So the variety piece really appealed to me. I guess the other thing, that did appeal again for those interested in the kind of journey was, I had been a head of marketing and I had been a full-time chief marketing officer for VC-backed B2B SaaS company. So I had been in the hot seat for a number of different clients. And there's no doubt that it's a very volatile role. You're in the firing line a lot. And, the tenure for many CMOs in B2B SaaS is probably only a couple of years, which means it's, there isn't a whole lot of security there. And we kind of go into that later as to why that is the case. But there is a lot of insecurity in it. So by, spreading classic portfolio risk, right, spreading your eggs into different baskets, it gives you some attractive elements too around, not having that that kind of churn that happens. And kind of the churn can happen for a whole host of reasons, nothing to do with performance, but it can be a whole mix of different motivations for changing the CMO.
Definitely. I mean, it's one of the biggest issues facing the role is sort of the short tenure Do you think having fractional CMO experience would be beneficial to try and reduce that the chance of that churn? Like, do you think people can sort of like jump into a fractional CMO role for a few years, build up experience working in these different startups and getting awareness of the different warning signs, as you said, if something needs to be tackled? Do you think having that fractional CMO experience could help you transition into like a more effectively into like a full-time CMO role?
It's a good question. So normally I'd say the journey comes the other way, Will. I think you come from a position of having worked in the full-time roles and then you kind of transition into it. I haven't really thought about it going back the other way. A lot of people are pretty comfortable with the model. So those in situ as fractional CMOs, because I guess you're your own boss, you're more in control of your time. You can kind of de-risk it from a client point of view in terms of who you work with, because you know the kind of key point here is that B2B SaaS companies, particularly the ones that are pre-Series B, are, you know, they're essentially a base of assumptions that the CEO has made. I mean, you're basically pitching on a, it's not a proven business, right? That's the whole point of B2B SaaS startups. They're not established businesses. They're essentially, assumptions that someone has made. They've raised capital on the back of it, and they're looking to deliver a solution into the marketplace at scale. But, you know, there's lots of misfires around the way. There isn't product market fit with some. You can back the wrong, you could be a great, you know, jockey on the wrong horse. So it's a very kind of challenging environment. So I guess you could definitely transition back, and there's no doubt you'd be a much stronger CMO for it. But if you did, I think you'd probably be looking to go back into sort of those that are post-Series B, where there's a little bit more certainty around the future trajectory of the company, whereby you can, you know, you can bring your skills to bigger resourcing, to bigger market opportunities with bigger teams. So there's some things to definitely think about, but your premise is right. I think it does mean you could go back in at a higher level.
It's interesting what you said about being in the SaaS marketplace is all about potential. It's all about promises that things could happen. And I suppose being a fractional CMO sort of shields you against potential failure of startups, I suppose, because you're getting the experience from them, but you don't have the full-on investment from being a full-time employee there. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing when it comes to how you approach marketing? Like, because lots of people talk about you have to be passionate about marketing. Do you think you can get passionate about things as a fractional CMO?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt. I mean, anybody that's worked with me, I mean, passion is sort of what I bring to the table in abundance. I think it's in your DNA, right? And I think you have some extra tools in your toolcase in terms of you can be a lot more direct, right? Because it works both ways. You can call things out more. You're not getting political because you're very much trying to align with what's best for the company. So there are definitely some elements like that, which are actually very important. The other sort of funny thing in terms of the role, right, is that really the thing to remember is that B2B SaaS journeys are actually quite long, you know. So again, I don't have the data to hand, but it's not like it's 2 or 3 years and you're exited and you're done and dusted. You know, one of my clients, for example, at the moment raised a Series A just last year. I worked with them as a full-time marketing person in 2012, 2013. And, you know, I'm back in working with them in 2020, 2021. So the journey is really, really long. And, you know, to use a phrase, you know, very few in the marketing function will ever stay on the bus, right? The kind of one or two roles that usually stay on the journey will be the founder, provided they are obviously staying on a growth trajectory, and often the CTO who may be a co-founder, who may be early in. But when you're looking at other functions, operations, HR, sales, marketing, you know, there's just no, I mean, again, I'm making some generalizations, but the odds that you come in the first, you know, first few months, first year and stay the length of time, you know, it happens, of course it happens, but highly improbable. So I think that's the kind of nature of the marketing function. And then the kind of last point on it is that, you know, there's one piece that often gets overlooked is that, you know, marketing can, you know, need different requirements in different stages of the journey. So you could argue in the early few years for B2B SaaS, your product marketing piece is the strongest piece. You know, then you kind of transition into, you know, lead gen and demand gen become kind of the key piece that you might need to be focused on. And then after that, you might transition into kind of internationalization and brand awareness, which again are slightly different things again. So the odds of the one CMO having, you know, deep domain knowledge in these various disciplines, and I'm not even talking about things like activation, retention, all those other things. So I think it's a skill set that you probably will get, you know, a certain tenure, and then somebody might be better placed to take it to the next level.
Definitely, definitely. So being a fractional CMO, would it be preferable to specialize in certain things within, like, certain, say, specialize in very, very early stage and then only work with very, very early stage? Or, as you said, like, you've been brought in at later stages. Like, is that more of an advantage to have a sort of like a broader knowledge of like how things progress and how things develop? Or is it better to focus on like very, very specific parts of growth and other aspects to do with startups?
Yeah, I mean, for me, well, I think there's definitely a sense that I'm transitioning more into those that are further along, right? So closer to Series B and above, because I guess, you know, one of the challenges with the kind of Series A level ones are, for want of a better phrase, and I do use the VC terminology quite a bit because, you know, it is difficult to bootstrap a B2B SaaS company. I mean, I have one client that is bootstrapped, and I know a couple of others that are bootstrapped that I've kind of worked with. But by and large, you know, it is a kind of a sector where the unit economics are quite kind of unusual, and that you generally benefit a lot from having, you know, VC investment. It doesn't have to be VC investment, but certainly deep pockets, because, you know, you're expending a lot of cash for sales and marketing up front. And of course, the whole working assumption is that the revenue is coming in, you know, into the years, into the future. So it does stress you from a cash point of view. But kind of getting back to the question, you know, I do think that, you know, my journey is definitely transitioning to, you know, Series B and beyond, because you start running into kind of issues with the earlier ones with just lack of resources, right? So, you know, you don't have the budget, you don't have the team size to execute. So all of a sudden, you know, you begin to, your impact isn't as kind of powerful. So I think you can cover all grounds. But what I would say is, if you're probably getting into a fractional CMO and you're more junior in your career, then being more focused on the early stage ones makes sense, because they won't have deeper pockets and probably you won't need to be managing a team of five or six. You know, you may just need one person to manage at that point, and you use a few freelancers for other bits, and your kind of budgets are quite modest. So I think then you transition further up field as you kind of grow your maturity in the function.
When it comes to picking the clients to work with, like, how selective do you have to be? Like, do you feel like you are picking clients to work with more than they're picking you to work with them, kind of thing? Like, how do you approach choosing clients that you work with?
It's a great question. So a lot of it are word of mouth, right? So again, you know, the fact you're freelance, the fact that I probably have four or five clients on the go at any one point, means that there's a sort of stability and there's sort of, I'm working, you know, for long periods of time without needing new clients or without looking for new clients. So, you know, often it's word of mouth, and that helps de-risk it for me compared to a complete or unknown inbound. You know, I'm able to sort of align on that. And then it's a case of trying to understand their challenge and you know, whether I can help them. So it's really a case for me more about, are they B2B SaaS, are they VC backed? I mean, the other factor I think is important, Will, that I do look for having execution capability in the team. So if they don't have a marketing junior in the team, I definitely wouldn't touch working with them then, because otherwise you end up with a long list of things to do and nobody to do it, because of course you can't delegate to anybody. So you definitely need somebody that's in the team that can kind of action the various things that you find and uncover. And part of your job is to kind of prioritize, but you do need someone to be able to delegate. So there's some of the things I think about.
So you're not going into a role and doing all the marketing for someone, you're advising them on how to do the marketing, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the theory. I mean, sometimes you end up doing stuff, right? So yeah. It's, you know, in my head, I'm always trying to stay as sort of out of the weeds as possible. But sometimes, you know, you just do need to do stuff, right? And, you know, I tend to do, I look at data quite a lot. So I will often do things like an analysis of Google Analytics data or Google Search Console data, record a short Loom video saying, look, here are the things that I'm spotting and here are the actions that need to be done. But by and large, it is a case of, you know, and sometimes it will vary. So I have had clients where they have had specific requirements, like, you know, US Series C companies looking to do a market entry into Europe. In that instance, it would be quite hands-on. And that's worth clarifying. So, you know, the broad kind of level of my work is the fractional CMO, which is the sort of the head of marketing on a part-time basis. But I do also do some work for other clients that would be, you know, if they're looking to raise VC and they need help with a B2B SaaS deck, helping to work on that. Or as I mentioned, if there's American companies looking to break into Europe and trying to understand the European landscape. So I do sometimes help clients on that basis too.
I mean, because you've got experience in economics and banking, don't you? Which kind of gives you that extra string to your bow. Is that something that's proved really helpful in terms of finding clients as a fractional CMO, having that extra skill resource on top of your marketing knowledge?
Yeah, look, it is an important point, because unit economics are really important, and data and numbers for B2B SaaS. So I'm not your typical marketer from that point of view, in that I have, you know, my primary degree was in economics and marketing a long, long time ago. I did an MSc in strategic marketing, again, back quite a long time ago. And I think I've also run a small software company. So I have a kind of broader operational sort of kind of skill set that I do think helps with credibility. It helps with kind of confidence. It helps with kind of prioritization. So there's some of the things that definitely do help. But then the flip side, I'd make the point that, you know, when I left university, there was no B2B SaaS, right? It didn't exist, right? There was no such thing. Okay, this is back in the 90s, right? And similarly, you know, there was no such thing as digital marketing, right? So again, it's worth remembering we're in a kind of this space where it is a fairly new discipline, and therefore, you know, academic credentials might give you a bit of a grounding in economics, which I think is just useful for business anyway. But, you know, modern marketing stuff is very modern, and therefore you are kind of needing to be more attuned with the kind of latest marketing theories and practices than ones that would have been taught 20 years ago.
Then, I mean, that's important to both in-house and fractional CMOs. You've got to be on the cusp. You've got to be aware of all the digital marketing trends and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So when did you feel ready to sort of launch yourself as a fractional CMO? Did you have like enough clients ready to go? Like, had you built up the connections necessary to sort of hit the ground running? Or was there a bit of like an in between period where you're trying to build up connections and stuff like that?
Yeah, no, again, a good point, right? So again, pre-COVID, you know, I was very active in networking, right, in terms of particularly in B2B SaaS communities. So based in London gives you, you know, an easy access to some of the sort of events that were being run. And then things like SaaS Stock would have been, an annual event in Dublin, which was one I would have attended. So, you know, I knew people, and I had been writing quite a bit of B2B SaaS content as well on Medium. Which was, you know, being picked up by people and sort of so gave me some awareness. And then I guess, you know, over a 20-year career, having worked in banking, having studied in the UK, having studied in Ireland, having spent time in the US, you know, you just build up contacts along the way. So, you know, when I ended up leaving full-time work and, you know, straight away I had kind of a couple of people I spoke to that, you know, would have been in the kind of category of people that I would have been looking for. And straight away they were looking for support, which meant I had clients, pretty much on the get-go. And I think the kind of piece here that's relevant for others is, you know, there's this notion of personas or ideal customer profiles. And you know, mine was really clear, right? So the buyers of, you know, services like people like me were VC-backed CEOs. They're usually male, 40 to 55, no head of marketing in situ, you know, ambitious for growth. They read content online because they're trying to learn the stuff themselves. They typically will attend SaaS Stock. They listen to podcasts that are on marketing and B2B SaaS. So for me, you know, you could quickly then, if you needed to sort of spike demand, or generate demand, you kind of knew who fitted your kind of persona and where you could access them. So again, you know, being active on LinkedIn and posting content that sort of helped people make sense of this world by adding value through your content meant that, again, that I had connections that I could always leverage if I needed to.
So, I mean, it's basically taking like a content marketing, like a marketing strategy and applying it to how you find work, which is a great approach, I think.
Right. And I guess the elephant in the room, of course, is I probably haven't been doing much in that for the last few years because I've been constantly busy, right? And then it begs the question, so Alan, why don't you scale? And I think that's probably, you know, a fair question that you could, you know, a natural evolution would be from freelance CMO to potentially, you know, starting an agency. And I guess part of me is I'd be more passionate about, you know, running a B2B SaaS company myself, not building an agency. I see the attractions of that model, but I also see, you know, that if I did want to commit to something, I'm going to go to B2B SaaS and build a software application and build a software company, not an agency. So it's a strange one that way, because, you know, everyone's ambitious to grow, but you know, once I'm doing work that I find interesting and I'm passionate about with clients that I like and I'm having an impact with them, I'm pretty happy with my current status. And again, that will evolve over time.
Well, I mean, that is one of the issues facing a lot of CMOs who are thinking about their career development, is a lot of the time, the next step or the next few steps takes them further away from the marketing function. They might move to like a COO position or a CEO position or a managing director position, which might not necessarily be their passion. Whereas like being a fractional CMO kind of keeps you in that space, doesn't it? It allows you to stay close to marketing functions, allows you to stay in business types that you enjoy, environments you enjoy. Do you think that's what has kept you sort of in this kind of mindset of sticking to like being a freelance CMO idea?
Yeah. I guess, you know, a slight tweak on that, in that, you know, I do get involved in sales and operations, mm-hmm. and product, but not in a heavy-handed way, but sort of spotting things that, you know, again, I've learned over the years, and simple things like, you know, you can often focus in a lead gen capacity on, you know, a funnel, but actually when you get people to, to the site and you're getting them signed up, are you looking at the activation rates? Are you looking at the onboarding? So there's always areas in, you know, broader remit, I guess, that I can bring to bear. And, you know, you pick things up over the years that, one of my main clients is a cybersecurity company. And, you know, now I know the importance of cybersecurity, which means I can sort of bring some of that information back to other clients, even though it doesn't sit in the marketing bucket. You know, I can quickly short circuit when I spot things and say, well, hold on a minute, guys, this doesn't look secure. Have you thought about doing a pen test, or have you thought about doing an audit on your cyber capability, or have you looked at things like second factor authentication being installed on all your apps? So I guess while I'm in the function, I think I can lend value in other areas, but part of it, of course, is, you know, you don't want to overwhelm either and you're just another opinion, but I guess part of it is bringing that experience and saying, look, it's almost like sharing stories, right? It's not being a case of dogmatic about this is the way to do things, but sharing stories that you think can inform when there are people are trying to make decisions in moving areas or challenging areas to make decisions.
So this broad experience and knowledge is going to be very, very helpful to being a fractional CMO. What other skills are quite, I wouldn't say unique to the fractional CMO role compared to the CMO role, but what skills and types of knowledge would you advise people to develop and focus on if they're thinking about breaking into sort of a fractional CMO approach to their career?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. So you end up being a little bit more direct because your time is quite constrained, right? So that comes with challenges because, of course, it can be hard to build relationships when you're being direct, right? And one of the things, of course, is you are essentially creating work for others because, you know, what you're trying to do is essentially, you know, people have been doing work, right? And you're kind of coming in critiquing it, and you're coming in and in many instances you're spotting things that are problematic. And I'll give you an example of a typical one, Will. So a number of my clients, I'll go in and they will have had someone in content, you know, for the last 6 or 8 months, you know, writing content. And I now have a nose for looking at content in, you know, if it's been optimized from an SEO point of view, or if it's actually been written with target personas in mind, I can quickly spot if it hasn't or hasn't. The reality is in most instances, you know, the content isn't really, well, it's not SEO optimized, and it's usually, it can be too entry level, or I mightn't be adding enough value. And then I go and have a look at Google Analytics, and I see that that sort of 10 people have read the blog, right? And then you go to the CEO, with they've had someone in that role for quite a while, and you know they haven't known that their content hasn't been delivering any real value, right? So all of a sudden you've exposed this issue, which you then have a playbook to fix. But of course, there's an implicit criticism of the person that's in situ. So you know you've got to marry this directness and try and build relationships, which of course is harder now that you're remote. So there are some of the things that I think are a little bit different about it, and you have to be kind of aware of that, right? So, you know, you're almost external, but also internal. So you want to bring the directness, you want to bring the evidence, but you want to have it backed up with analytics, but you're also going to be implicitly criticizing. And look, often the criticism is more a case of a lack of awareness, going back to an earlier point about the kind of skill deficiency in some of this. But also, you know, just people didn't know. It's not like they're doing, but if they don't know this stuff, they don't know this stuff. So it's no, you know, but I guess then you're on a journey of, look, is there an appetite to go on the journey with you? And of course you need to provide evidence to say, actually, here's what I'm thinking. Here's examples of it working. So I've labored the point a little bit, but I guess you know, it is unusual from that point of view, and you kind of have to be evidence-based, you know, working on relationships, but you're also quite direct. So it can be difficult from that point of view.
Because I suppose in a lot of the conversations I've had with CMOs on the show, one of the issues that does crop up a lot is the importance of having those close relationships with other key stakeholders in an organization, with like the head of sales, like the head of finance, stuff like that. How do you develop those kinds of connections as a fractional CMO, where you have a very, very limited amount of time? Like, do you just charge straight in and say, like, this is how it has to be, this is the evidence? Or do you have time to build up those kinds of like working relationships that other CMOs really need to rely on?
No, look, it's an important point. And the reality is that that's one of the real drawbacks of the role, right? You know, you're time pressed, or you're always time pressed, and there's always 1,000 things to do. And you're trying to make judgment calls on what are the things to prioritize. And again, that comes a little bit easier with experience, but it does mean then that you are conceding on things that a normal CMO would not. So you're absolutely right. You know, often in the work I do, your kind of main stakeholder is the CEO. You don't really get an opportunity to build much of a relationship with the CFO. I mean, you might ask some questions around the unit economics and try and understand the kind of basic metrics of the company. You might look to work on forecasts and budgeting, but yeah, you definitely don't get the chance to sort of book in a half an hour, a weekly meeting, which you should, right? If you're full-time, you should be talking, as your point, to your head of product, your head of sales, and your finance. You should be meeting those three, you know, probably 30 minutes each week. And of course, they're time pressed as well, and they may not prioritize it. So It is a bit of a drawback to the model at that point. I guess the only thing I would say is, if you have to choose, you know, the bit that I find, and this goes to full-time CMOs as well, by the way, that often is the one that misfires the most, is that kind of head of sales piece, whereby like the sales function really, you know, should be much stronger, and they typically aren't, in terms of feedback loops and really bringing a lot more information back to marketing. And similarly, marketing probably need to be telling sales a lot more around their kind of campaigns that are planned. So that piece I do see is weak in many, you know, circumstances, not just with a fractional CMO, and definitely one that needs to be improved.
I suppose silver lining to the whole situation is, it means you're not shackled too long to particularly problematic or issue-laden CROs and CPOs. Like, you can disentangle yourself from that and be just, I don't want to say just the interim CMO, but like, you're there to do your job, you're there to do your project. You don't have to get all embroiled in office politics and stuff like that in the same way that other CMOs might have to.
Right, but you're also like a SaaS model, right? So at the same time, you know, going back to the earlier metaphor, you know, I don't want to be churning clients, right? It takes time to find new ones, and you've got to upskill, and you've got to get to know the industry, and you've got to know the people. So, you know, there's also that interesting kind of, you know, SaaS model, as I said, so you don't want to be churned out. So you do want longevity of tenure with these companies, because in some ways you can get more longevity, right? Because, you know, you're de-risking it for them in terms of there's not quite the emotional baggage and the cost of a full-time CMO. So, you know, you're only 2 or 3 days a month, and, you know, you can kind of continue in the role if you're providing a lot of value till the point that they get to the situation where some of my clients will have, you know, get to the point where they do need to hire a head of marketing, and you probably would be involved in that process, and that's your time to step out. So yeah, you still want to get along with these people, and still it makes business sense too to get along with these people, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a small world, isn't it? You never know when you're going to end up working again with other people, do you?
Yeah. And part of it is being like everything in life, right? You've got to build relationships. You can't function in a world of kind of just doing your own thing, right? You're all interdependent. So yeah.
Exactly. So this has been great, Alan. I'm conscious of time. Perhaps to wrap things up, let's say, like, what is your one absolute golden rule piece of advice that you would give to someone who's either thinking about becoming a fractional CMO or someone who's just starting out as a fractional CMO? Like, what would you advise them to really, really focus on in that early, really early part of their career path in this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd look at having a playbook. So you're almost looking at the different, you know, elements that you would normally see in a marketing function, and almost rating yourself against each one, but also then having, you know, go-to people for the ones that you were, you know, not so strong on. So for example, you know, my model works most effectively when I've got a virtual team. So for example, I work very closely with a freelance Google Ads person. I work very closely with a UI UX specialist. I work very closely with a brand agency. So I guess the kind of the piece of advice is that you can't do it all yourself. So it's good to have an ecosystem around you that you can drop people in, or freelancers. And I often use freelancers more than consultancies, because, you know, many of my clients, again, are the pre-series B piece. So they are a little bit cash resource tight, right? So that will be the advice. Just be really clear on the bits that you've got gaps, and fill them with trusted parties that you can rely on. So that's probably the main piece of advice.
Great advice for life as well, I think, Alan. Like, fill your life with trusted parties and people that you can rely on.
Absolutely will.
Yeah. But thank you very much once again, Alan. It's been really great speaking to you. This has been really, really great conversation. I'm sure our audience has enjoyed listening to it as well. Thank you, audience, for listening to us, and we'll be back soon with another CMO Convo.